My name's Ted Madison. I'm on teaching staff here for another day or two. I've been up here for 2 weeks with Michael Arndt doing theater. And I think, as most of you know, we did a play last night called The Baby Dance. And so the purpose of this session is to just react to the play. So I'm just going to do a brief intro, and then basically I want to get out of the way and let you talk about the issues and the play. It was so real quickly, I chose the play back in February or so. I just read it, and as soon as I put it down, I knew it was the play I wanted to do at Holden, and started finding a cast in LA and brought up some actors with me. And ultimately for me, the play, the simplest way to explain it is that it was a great story. I thought it was a great story. And that's really all I cared about. I figured whatever the summer theme was, it would have been able to fit into whatever that theme was. It happens to be Tree of Life, and if we want to discuss that, that's fine too. But basically I was just looking for a good story with real people that could make an impact. And that's what's great about doing theater at Holden, is that we can do this afterwards and it can debrief. It doesn't always happen as much outside of here. So I did come up with a few things, a few important lines that might be part of our discussion or not, but for me, these were some of the key lines for each character, and we can talk more about that later. But I basically want to moderate and let you react and ask questions of me or of each other. We've got some of the cast here. We've got Kata up here, who played Rachel. I don't know if Tracy's here right now. And the rest of my cast just went down. They all left. So it's different being up here this week. Last week, we were about four or five of us up here. So I'm just going to throw it open to, if you want to come up with themes, questions, just initial reactions, just have at it, and I'll try to be fair and make sure you wave me down here.
First, we probably should all say how much we enjoyed the acting and the play and the presentation and having it, and how provocative it was for discussion in Seinfeld since the play.
Thank you.
Well, I was struck by how easy it is to be a liberal like the mother Rachel was when she was removed and she was rich and she didn't live in the trailer court, and how then Al said, well, then why did you advertise for a white child? I was struck by the dichotomy there with it's easy to spout something and not live it. They haven't lived it.
Anyone on that tack?
Just simply for me, it was that there were tons of stereotypes and prejudices on all sides, all people, until we recognize our own, we'll never move forward, and that's the hard part. I think at that moment she was struck, wasn't she? But hadn't realized.
But I don't think you recognize your own until it really touches your soul and your heart in terms of raising a disabled or special needs child. It's one thing to be able to say it's something you know, think would be wonderful to do, but when you're forced to face that decision yourself.
Yeah, and that makes us look at the character of Richard really closely. Is he completely unsympathetic? Is he a villain? Is he just full of fear?
He was more of a businessman who just wanted to make a good investment, it seemed.
Or was he honest too? I mean, maybe he just knew as a person he couldn't handle a child like that. I wanted to beat him up for that, but then I tried to give him the.
And he had his mother to contend with too.
That's true.
good Jewish mother. That was so wonderful.
He seemed to be
fairly clear, at least with his words, that if it had been their own child, that would be one thing. Versus an adopted child, that was another thing. He was real clear about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Rachel was so caught up in wanting to be a mother that she was ready to go for it no matter what. Until there was a little bit of time that elapsed, and she didn't see how she made that transition, though.
And that's a new, that's a new concept. It's a modern concept, isn't it?
What is that?
Of the choice that you have. Mm-hmm. And what kinds of parameters you're going to put around the choosing of a child.
But that's where the rich and the poor split, because the rich have more choice. Mm-hmm. It ends up the poor, Wanda, had no choice, and then she was now faced with raising a special needs child with hardly any support.
Right.
Not at all. We could see, maybe you'll do chapter two next summer when someone else adopts their child. Able to.
If anyone wants to write that, go ahead. Talk to the author.
But I guess I was so struck by people of means and the choices that we have. And I put myself in that category. I think most of us in America are. But anybody here at Holden probably is. But how limited the choices are for people.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the extra.
The lack of understanding of them was just so phenomenal. I mean, vitamins. How would she buy vitamins? The air conditioned thing without a generator, on and on and on. It's just infuriating.
Although I'm not so sure that you actually need a generator.
Yeah. The con artist.
Yeah.
I think Al worked it as much as he could.
Yeah. Right. He was not, but he was also needing to survive.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Can you tell us anything about the playwright?
I don't know her. I've read one other thing of hers. I forget the name. I just know that the writing to me made sense. Michael Arndt was a little concerned about the playing to stereotypes a little much in the script. And he thought, if anything, it erred on the side of stereotyping the male characters more than the female characters. And I think that's something to look at with both Richard and Ron's character. Al's got this nice arc that he can travel, and you can hate him at the end of Act 1, but hopefully by the end of the show, you're a little more understanding of his world. And so that's a nice arc for me to travel as an actor, but for Richard, he's got a much bigger challenge in just Act 2 to come across as a full human being. And that's why I kind of came up with these high and low points for people, because I thought that was a really interesting way to look at the play. It's just when you're sure Al is, the most hated thing you've ever seen, he does something to bring it back. So.
Mm-hmm. How did you identify Al's high there? I'll give him quarters for the video game.
Yeah, that's just for me. Yeah. And maybe you guys have some other ideas. But for me, that just shows that he was taking care of the family and the kids, and the quarters, he didn't have a lot of money, and even that's a small, I think that's a pretty big thing, that he really took responsibility while she was still recovering, and used that to help get her back on her feet again at the end there.
I thought his high was when he said, forget the car, I need new tires.
Yep. Yeah, that's a much more realistic request on his part, wasn't it? He wasn't like trying to pull one over on them anymore.
Yeah.
And he must have listened to, you have the ability to make life.
Mm-hmm.
That must have touched him, I think.
Does he say something at the end, at the last scene where they just had Don?
Yeah, that was...
What does he say?
She says, my last line is... let's see, my hands are wet from the cans? No. No, my last line is, she says, someone will take her, won't they? And I say, sure they will. And then she says, my belly's flat. He doesn't say anything when he lays down.
Oh, yes.
See, I certainly don't think Richard at all is a villainous character. I think he's honest, and he's not empathetic to other people's needs. I don't think he's villainous at all. And I don't think he was portrayed as such by Michael. And I thought that Wanda was the most all-around compassionate character. And I'm sure that was intentional. That's how I felt.
Well, Ursula was a rock. You know, she was... She did that role as well as I think it could have been done.
Right? Yeah.
So,
I think we'll see her in the future. I think she has quite a future.
Ursula's in the right business.
Her accent was so incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. Her ability to show her emotions was just unbelievable. She couldn't cry.
Yeah.
Or just wet her eyes, a tear. I mean,
I was struck by the characters, you know, they were full characters, and they, as you say, travel an arc and all this, and how realistic that was. I've seen my friends go through different places. You know, one friend has given up a baby for adoption, another one has been an adoptive mother. I've seen them be both the villains and the not so much heroes. Yeah, the victims, the villains that play all these parts. I've seen this drama worked out from so many different angles, and I was really struck by how well the play brought that forward. And what I was left with when I was walking away from the play was there is no easy answer. You know, as my being the friend of all these women who are going through this from different perspectives, I always feel pulled to, you know, to take a perspective and to be this, and I've realized that there really is no perspective that I'm supposed to take, you know, because it's tragic and painful and challenging from all perspectives.
Mm-hmm. That brings out for me the most powerful line. One of the most powerful lines was when Wanda said, "No, you really don't."
You don't.
Really. We all try to be compassionate and caring, but you know, if you haven't walked in those moccasins, you really.
One thing that the play did that I think helped me understand men's feeling as a part of this. We all sort of thought it was a woman's issue and. And they have to go through this pain and the decision and all that. Mm-hmm. But this pulled in men much better. It helped raise my consciousness about that.
And I thought it was pretty obvious that it was written by a woman and not a man. Mm-hmm. I thought it was too stereotypical of what you would assume a man would think at that point. And I don't think it explored the depth enough of a male character. And I thought it was pretty obvious that it was written by a female. My other point, though, is for Al, he was attempted to be portrayed as this redneck, quote-unquote, but I don't think it was enough. And the one line that caught me, that sent me back and said, no, this isn't far enough, is when he referred to the other people that lived in the trailer court as the niggers, and then he looks at Rachel and realizes that she is uncomfortable with that and almost apologizes to her. So, well, they call each other that. A redneck would go,
yeah.
He wouldn't even identify that. And he would have cared less if she was uncomfortable with it. And I thought at that point, if Al's gonna be this racist, should have pushed it a lot further and never apologized for it.
Well, I've met racists though who said those exact same words to me, you know. But
he said that because Rachel was uncomfortable. That was a way to pass, you know,
right.
Make it all right.
Good point.
I saw it differently when he responded to that. I don't think it was his way of trying to make her feel comfortable. It was his way of jabbing her even more. Because he kept that up. He kept responding to her uncomfortableness, not to make her more comfortable, to make her even more uncomfortable. His way of getting back at her is the way I read that.
That's interesting.
Well, I would probably take the other point of view, because I think that would make the racist more stereotypical. I don't think our stereotypes aren't like we all think our stereotypes are, because all of us have the ability to see people's eyes and see body language and see how we're affecting people. And I think that's the point where
we have to do, you know, the bridge building, because the races do have a heart in there, you know, and if you want to call them races. And I think Al's heart came out in many different ways. I think the coins, as you said, the understatement of that was really powerful. The tires were wonderful, but more noticeable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he was willing to give to his kids what his kids needed at that point, which was the entertainment in a cool place.
You're right, exactly.
And there weren't any other choices.
And even bringing that sad-looking bouquet of daisies to
yeah.
his wife when there
the were flowers, he had a lot of tender pieces there that, you know, so racism would only be one little, maybe aspect.
To me, it's almost like he's just almost mouthing what he thinks he should be mm-hmm. yeah. mimicking from his environment. That's he's just got 30 years of that, and it's almost like it's not even, I don't think he's even aware of some of that, you know. How
well, the shame issue that he has to wrangle with, and it's pushed down so far, shame. Uh-huh. You know, when people feel shame, it's perpetuated by reactions they see from other people as being above me or whatever, mm-hmm. which isn't.
I thought he was feeling more anger about everything piling up on him.
Yeah.
Everything going wrong. Rather than shame, I felt anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt he was so trapped. I mean,
yeah.
He couldn't go back on an airplane to wherever
mm-hmm. yeah.
and have a different life. He was trapped and had
yeah.
been from day one to the rest of his life.
I think it's overwhelming to him when she says, you know, I'll just write you a check for $600.
Wow!
Yeah. Are you kidding me? I just write you a check for $600.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's a, what an incredible chasm between mm-hmm. these two mm-hmm. families.
I'd like to talk to the playwright. I know this play on the surface is about classism and some gender issues and some racist issues. But I was most interested in the commodification of life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I thought the lawyer was a linchpin of
yep.
everybody.
Yep.
And he could have been a broker.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
The monetization of the life and all the external effects. That's what I was interested in. In fact, I wrote a letter to a friend last night after the play. Told her about that.
Wow.
Well, and some scholars have talked about how amniocentesis or clauses in contracts and things like that are quality control measures for this product, you know, now that money is exchanged in adoption or in surrogate motherhood or whatever, that these are quality control measures and you can expect it to mimic more of a market environment as it progresses
right.
as a
right.
product line. So I thought, and I did think that brought that out really well.
Yeah, a lot of questions for the future about how specific can you be with birth mothers and, you know, all the technology, and what are the ethics behind that? Too short, Jewish, you know.
Intelligence. Our other kids.
Long legs. I mean, everybody had this. The thing for me is so powerful is like, everybody had this idea of this kid, right? And had an influence on this child.
Yeah.
And this child is just sitting there in Wanda's womb.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it had this, the child for me had all this expectation around it, all this building up around it. And
sort of like shopping for a computer.
Yeah.
Getting all extras.
I think the desperate seeking to have a baby mm-hmm. on the part of Rachel and Richard came on out fairly well. I mean, they were, particularly in Rachel, how desperate she was to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a physician, and I get letters, or have up until probably the last year or two, we get two or three letters from people with great photographs of their homes and in a in an environment saying, if you have an unwanted white baby, you know, in your practice, really desperate for love.
Thank
you. I was struck by Richard just beginning to realize that he had chosen hike as being more important than religion.
Yes.
Or other background issues.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he didn't really realize that until he was in it.
Yeah.
That's great, and I'm glad you saw that, because that was that's important for my actor to know that he was able to find that. That was a little bit of a trick.
Mm-hmm. It must be. Rachel acted absolutely exactly the way a mother acts, because our daughter went through this. And I mean, I just had tears in my eyes the whole time, because she acted exactly like our daughter did when she received her adopted baby. It was just unbelievable.
Kata, that's a good little one.
Thank you.
That's interesting how Rachel had to be so desperate to get over the fact that this child might have special needs. But Richard hadn't got to that point yet. He was kind of going along, but he had reached the desperate part where he has to just drop all these stigmas of long legs and everything. And maybe he didn't want it bad enough. He didn't realize that he was being so picky about a baby.
And how does that make you feel toward either him or...
Well, I think he was being honest. You know, just how many people would say, I don't know if I can do this. I mean, when it comes right down to it, does anybody think they can do it? And for him to say that, I mean, I think they need some time to talk about it, but what's worse, saying they couldn't do it up front or just ignoring the child for their whole life because they couldn't figure out how to deal with it?
The play made me think about the importance of being comfortable with where one's own life is at, and not thinking the grass is greener in another situation. And to me, the two characters who are most comfortable were, well, the most comfortable was Wanda, but then Richard. To me, Richard and Wanda had some similarities, and Al and Rachel were needy in terms of feeling there was something missing or kind of feeling like a void there for some reason. So I was just related back to myself and trying to tell my, kind of not always thinking, oh, it could be better if this or that or that would happen, but being thankful for where you're at in your life and not seeking something to make you feel better. To me, Rachel was seeking something to make her feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a real dangerous view. If it happens, great, but let's not put all our emphasis on it.
Like,
and Wanda seemed very centered with that.
Like buying lottery tickets?
One of the issues
we go up here.
I was surprised that Richard hadn't met them before. Mm-hmm. And he was so interested in this business proposition, not to have ever, I mean, I don't think he ever saw, what's Ursula's character?
Wanda.
Never met her, never looked at the baby.
That's right.
First time he met Al was in that room.
Right.
And then I got to thinking, well, when you're pregnant, it's often a criticism of husbands that they haven't bonded like you have. And so
right.
Maybe the author was trying to show that just like in real work, the husband's bonding comes later.
Right. So. It's interesting too, in the screenplay adaptation, they did made a TNT TV movie out of this with Laura Dern and Stockard Channing. Laura Dern played Wanda and Stockard Channing played Rachel. And Jane Anderson wrote the teleplay on that. And they really changed it a lot. They had Richard come in early and meet Wanda. And they had this whole, the four of them out one night when Al's singing with his Dean Tully band or whatever. And they're kind of bonding. And she switched it in the screenplay too. She switched it that Richard was the one who couldn't reproduce, or it was his genetic, it was his problem, not Rachel's. So it was very interesting to see that. That film, in contrast to the script.
Do you think it made it better, or just a different story?
I don't know if it made it any better. It just, for TV, you have to move locations.
Yeah.
So I think it was just by design of the producers, trying to market it a little more. I think the play as written had a little more impact, I think, than the TV Showtime version. So I'm sorry, it was Showtime, not TNT. Showtime.
I kept expecting, even though Rachel said she wasn't able to have a child, I expected that she was protecting Richard and that that was going to come out soon, that was Richard's issue. And I expected Al to accuse Richard of that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many things that still, you covered so many issues, and there's still more, that could have been covered.
Mm-hmm. One that bothered me that wasn't covered, and I know it wasn't written for a religious group, but us as church people, where were we? She didn't feel comfortable going to church. She clearly cared because she talked about the Lord Jesus and said her prayers. Here she hadn't been to church, and nobody was helping that family, and she wasn't even comfortable enough to go, and that could have been some support.
That's a great, I hadn't even really, there is so much, like, what is that about? Why is she uncomfortable about going to church?
Well, the Lutheran just has a great story about that, written by a woman who is infertile. And I have an infertile daughter-in-law who has gone to church all her life, and she feels threatened by the church and all these happy families.
Right, exactly.
Are so wonderful.
When are you going to have kids?
Her heart is breaking because she wants to be the happy family. She can't. So, you know, it can change somebody who always has been a good church person to somebody who, that's almost an impossible place to be. And I've seen it in her own eyes. I couldn't believe it.
That's just, how many of us know someone who's dealt with this kind of thing?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just a show of hands. I mean,
That
was, there's a lot of us, I think, have been touched by this in a lot of different ways.
I thought there was an interesting contrast, too. One of the things that the church can provide is a sense of support of community. And in the scene, all four actors are there out of pain. And there's especially in that first scene between the two women, there's a real searching for some sense of community. But eventually the four of them just find that it's more painful to be with each other. But what they're all needing, none of them are there by choice. They're all there because of the pain of their lives, and they're looking for some sense of community or some meaning. And, and in some ways, it's almost a parable of what the church isn't. Those kind of things.
I thought it was interesting that influence or the power of the characters whom you never met. Her mother, Wanda's mother, as how is she going to tell her and then actually creating a lie to tell her?
Yeah.
Richard's mother and father and the role that he had. And I guess at that point when he starts talking about that, it was like the reality of adopting this child. He never had thought about it until that moment when the realization strikes that, his father would have been appalled at this process.
Yeah.
So the influence that those unseen characters had on those four whom we met, and that's true for all of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Richard's got this nostalgic, romantic image in his mind of what a family is supposed to be and how it's all supposed to happen, and he really has a hard time letting go of that.
I want to say something about the scene, the first scene of the second half. What a good job you did of pulling within a few minutes the whole image of it being a baby selling proposition that Ron was doing, how he came in from the airport, changed his clothes, put on the next new shirt for the next new baby. And that was all within just a few minutes, all of that conversation.
That's a very well written
very
piece,
well written.
And Michael just nailed it.
That really set the stage for us to understand it.
Can we find any humanity in Ron, the lawyer here? Probably the least sympathetic character.
I was just going to say, we haven't talked much about Ron. Is he the kind of character that Christ would spit out of his mouth?
Lukewarm.
I'll put it out there.
I saw Ron as one of the few people who was negotiating in some way the conflict between these two families. He would step in every once in a while and at least try and deal with both. Uh-huh. He only had this legal model to work with, but he was trying to use it as best he could to make something happen in the situation. So I saw him as one of the few people who was there as a support of some sort.
He didn't want to lose his fee.
No.
I thought it was money. I thought Ron was going to, when Richard Gozo said, well, what's the damage? Mm-hmm. I thought Ron was going to say $10,000.
Oh. Yeah.
And keep the rest. And I thought when he said it was about $500, I go, well, that's, he has some moral integrity there. Because I really thought what was going to come out is, you know.
Except that he took credit for it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
He took credit for having negotiated that.
It seemed like Richard was on the same wavelength to me a lot. They're both into the commodity thing of the whole thing.
So,
Richard and Ron were both kind of into the commodity thing. I saw them as more alike than different in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. But he could help bridge the relationship there. He admitted that.
Oh, he sure could.
That it was Al's idea to just do the tires. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really interesting, that discussion between Rachel and Wanda, where Wanda was sort of asking her now, are you going to take it to church? Are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? Because there's a book on open adoption, and it says in the very beginning that it's, you know, it's just such, it touches you in such places because it's a power struggle. Because the one person's got, they've got what the other one wants, basically. Mm-hmm. And that, I thought it was so interesting how the play, how beautifully through the dialogue it went back and forth on that, mm-hmm. on that power struggle. But I really enjoyed that part where Wanda and Rachel were really, you know, getting to know each other. And it's because it's a strange place, you know, to be in. And how they did that with the dialogue was pretty neat. Did you guys find that offensive? I mean, how much did you think Wanda had the right to expect, you know, and back, you know, for this baby?
Following that power struggle, I thought the whole thing was a power struggle. I really got a kick out of when your character was after Rachel about which one of them had the problem that they couldn't reproduce.
Yeah.
You know, he was feeling put down for living in a trailer house in that neighborhood and, you know, no money to do this, and then he got right back at her.
I love seeing those legs.
Yeah. You were good. You're a good writer.
But that metaphor of the dance is kind of what I think is such a great title and so appropriate for what you're talking about, that it is this fine line of what is Rachel? It's this dance, and I don't know what dance it is. It's a cha-cha or it's a polka or what it is, but it changes the beats a lot. And what is Rachel going to let go? Okay, the vitamins. Okay, the coffee. Okay, the smoking, the heat, the air conditioning. What does he hit your kids? What is? At what point does Rachel say, you know what? That's. But does she, you know, why are you putting all that crap in your body?
I thought Rachel did a great job though when she took the beer can.
Oh yeah.
I thought Rachel was going to like be honored. Don't drink that beer, and it was to put ice, you know, on her wound.
Oh, right.
But it was a beer can, and I just thought those words were going to come out of Rachel's mouth. Right?
We'll do the improv version.
Yeah. Yeah.
What we would say as people if we were these people.
Yeah.
It would be a vastly different play. Yeah.
Did anybody else? I had a feeling that Richard was really being pushed and driven, and that he was not a full participant. Yeah. Anybody else have that feeling?
He was doing it for his wife.
Yeah. He was doing it because there was something his wife really wanted to do.
He was doing it because he loved her, and he was doing it because he was.
What do you mean not a full participant?
In the baby.
He was participating in this whole thing, this mm-hmm. adoption, mm-hmm. Because that's what his wife wanted to do. He was more able, it seemed to me, to accept the fact that they were not fertile.
Interesting. Anybody else want to comment on that?
Huh? That touchstone line, that's pretty.
Yeah, when I say my friend, you always have the advantage.
Yeah.
You have the ability to make life.
I saw Richard as being the, he was protecting Rachel as best he could by remaining objective. And he was trying to just keep this, you know, level-headed thing. He was trying to be the even keel person mm-hmm. in this transaction and trying not to get too attached. And I saw him as a very passionate character, and it was only because he didn't have a chance to have a relationship with Wanda or see the baby that he wasn't right there with Rachel. I thought that that given circumstances, he would be the one who was just like Rachel. And, you know.
But he didn't want to see the baby. Wasn't he offered the chance to
look at the baby? He was offered a chance to look at the baby.
But I thought that he had to do that to protect himself and from being too wrapped up in this to be able to walk away.
Mm-hmm. And in the first act, he chose not to come down to see her. He had a business thing, so she came alone. And maybe that was planned. I mean, maybe he didn't want to be involved.
Yeah, he also had to pay attention to his mother. He had that relationship. He had that relationship going too, but needed tending to.
Yeah. he's balancing a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was like he was dragging his feet, because the minute things weren't perfect, he was out the door.
He was detached.
And if they were perfect, he probably could have bought into it.
Mm-hmm. And is that stereotypical writing? Is that maybe a cartoon version of what an LA business movie executive is like? I don't know. I mean, he is used to having, when he says the word, things fall into place. And things weren't falling into place. And how he dealt with that was, you know, by escaping, you know.
To what extent do you think that actors change characters based on their own personality? I mean, for example, I thought that Richard could have been portrayed as much more of a jerk, but the actor who portrayed him, I liked his acting, and I have a sympathetic portrayal toward him. In another version, could that have been different, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think both last week and this week, both Joe and Michael and I were working together to find that vulnerability for him.
Because I didn't think Richard came off, at least for me, as a jerk, and I think in a different tenor toward this, with the same writing, he could have.
Yeah, I think it's, if his stuff about what did we dream about, honey, and there's other child, and this child could have big problems, if that comes out all as anger and, you know, attacking, then I think you wouldn't have felt some kind of sympathy for him. That's where actors and directors have to figure out how to.
So was this Richard more sympathetic, did you think, than the week before?
Oh, I don't know. I think they both did a real good job, you know, finding his humanity. With some difficult writing to get through on that. But it was there for them to find. I wish we would have had a few more weeks, too.
How do you find these people to work with you?
Well, I just had worked with Ursula and Joe from last week, and Michael. I've worked with them at all different stages in LA. We've done a small film together. We've been in acting class together. So it's just my friends. So I had the challenge just to find someone who's willing to do the role, and then tell them where we're going. trying to explain Holden Village and how to get there, and you know, there's no phones, there's no pagers, and you're out of the loop, and it's about 16 different transportation systems to get there. So I had to work it a bit, but you know, once they got up here, they knew they were mine.
I thought that I needed an evening performance for this play, but I also thought that for Wanda and Al, this is morning, afternoon, evening, nighttime, all the time, no matter when. Uh-huh. Life for them was just all day long.
Yeah, interesting.
I thought it was interesting the abuse issue was just barely introduced. Mm-hmm. And that could have gone all in a whole direction. I thought Rachel might become a social worker at that point and get some help in the home or help with that problem. Mm-hmm. It's huge. sounded like.
You asked if Richard was a stereotypical person. I think he was stereotypical of economic man, but not of man or men. I think he had to be the way he was. I mean, he was going to the market, you know, searching out all the different products,
right,
and demanded a good product.
Right.
And if it was defective, he returned it and get a different one. So I thought it was stereotypical, but not of men necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, just the whole commodification process.
Yeah, I found that it's all returnable line from Rachel that hit me last week in the discussion when she gives the dress to Juan. Well, you know, it's all returnable. That to me really resonated with the later events. That, is that how they view life? It's a little more, it's...
I had a sense maybe that Wanda hadn't actually met her physician. She had certainly wasn't going on a regular basis.
Definitely the latter, if not the
other. So the monies that were being sent for a doctor's visits were being used to survive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's actually on that point that I found it interesting that welfare was applied only to the noisy folks outside.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
certainly this family would qualify for welfare, right, it seemed to me. And, of course, if you look at the statistics, that's who are the primary recipients of welfare, are poor white people. And so it's interesting to me that the playwright didn't add that dimension to it. Because you could view the whole play and get the impression that these folks aren't getting any welfare. And if they aren't, is it because they're too proud to take it?
Right.
Which could very well be. Or what? I don't know, but that was a part of it. I kind of wrinkled my nose at. I wasn't sure what to think about. Wrinkled my brow.
Yeah.
What character are we to look for you on TV?
You'd have to call some producers in LA and say, you know, have them write a part for me. I have no way of predicting what the next thing I do is. That's the way my life is. I go to auditions and then I try to forget about it and just keep moving ahead with my day and keep moving ahead with the stuff that I'm working on. But so I've written a play with a partner and we're putting that up in the fall in LA and we've got some ideas of how that might be a very bizarre comedy on some obscure cable station, but so that's what's going on with me. Yeah.
Do you see this play ever being picked up by local repertory theaters? Or?
Absolutely. This play's being done a lot right now across the country. It was done, I think it opened in Pasadena a few years ago, but it's being done, and these scenes are being done in classes all over the place. She's being produced. Yeah, she's getting her run, which is good, because I think she's a good writer.
Especially with these discussions.
Yeah.
I thought the set last night, and maybe you had to be aware of kind of the theater in the round, but the refrigerator, this little refrigerator, I thought was a great symbol of what life was for Wanda. You know, just stick it in the smallest place.
Yeah.
And it was, I thought the set was really.
Well, we thank Tracy for her little fridge. That's her own personal fridge.
Well, it really would have changed it if it would have been a full-size refrigerator.
Yeah.
That really would have been, I didn't think of it until now.
Yeah.
But that would have been quite different, you know. Both had to get down there.
It did have this nice symbolism to it that it was more just by default because of sight lines and the need to see people.
Yeah. So. Same thing with the fold-out couch. I mean,
that was
incredible symbol of working, of how you have to live when you don't have much, you know?
I really wanted to create this ceiling. I really actually wanted to hang something at about this level for me that I had to duck under. Because that's even in the writing how it's the trailer. He has to go under the front door.
Yeah. Well, you know, I thought it was a motel room at first. And for a while I thought it was a motel room until I heard Trailer Park. And maybe I didn't hear Trailer Park early enough. Maybe it was said and I didn't hear it. But
oh, okay.
That's what I thought it was a motel room. And I thought, because the mother was taking care of the other children, that they had they'd gotten some kind of vouchers to be in, is what I thought it had.
That's the beauty of theater, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you tone down the language for Holden?
Yeah. Yes, we did. I sent up the script, and it caused a mini, what shall we say, mini explosion. No, it wasn't that bad. There was discussion up here about the language of the play, mostly, I think, and because if there's too many four-letter words in there, people just kind of close their ears.
Oh yeah.
And I've had experience with that stuff up here before, yeah. And so we agreed that I would just edit the language enough to make it have the same intention. I think you can say a lot of these same things with the same intention behind it. No, it wasn't a Tarantino kind of script. It wasn't, or a Mamet kind of script. It wasn't just full of four-letter words, but we kept in the one or two we needed to make sense of the play.
And they had impact then.
It's too bad making movies doesn't have that same approach.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I also wonder if the ones that are portraying these parts were a little bit more demanding of this, what a turnaround that could be.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like they go to the opposite. Do you
exactly.
feel that actors and actresses could change if they really want
to? Yeah, it's pretty unimaginative, the writing we see these days in movies and stuff. And if you're forced to stay away from the foul language, you know, then I think you're forced to be more creative.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And it's more meaning impacts when it happens, like last night.
Right. Exactly. Though I would, if I do this play outside of here, we'll put all the language that Jane has back in it, because she uses it in just, I think, the right spots. It's not, it doesn't overwhelm you, I don't think. So.
How about you, Rachel? Can you tell us about what it's like for you?
Yeah, why don't you tell us about your...
We have another Rachel here, too.
Yeah, we got two of them.
We saw you.
Why don't you guys both talk a little bit about your preparation or your how you felt before, during, after, Kate?
How did you feel about the bologna sandwich on white bread?
Yeah.
Tracy, go ahead.
I actually had a bologna sandwich last night.
It's still in your fridge.
I've been up here for a year.
Those are the cast party.
I know when she brought it out, I kind of had this shocked look on my face, like this is really special for her. She worked hard on this bologna and ham and cheese, white bread. You know, this is a special dinner. This is probably, you know, something that her kids might not always get. And still, I was like, great, thanks, you know. It's just another thing that goes along the lines of class differences. If she was coming to my house, I'd probably have, you know, something really special and expensive and bottled water. And so I'm pretty sure when I did it, came across as, you know, I'm going to do my best to show my appreciation for this, but...
How about your Wonder Bread experience?
Well, we didn't do it at all in dress rehearsal. So that's just like, yeah, I didn't, no. The only thing I was going to say, just way earlier on, when we were talking about kind of Richard and Rachel and that whole relationship, is for me, just when we were doing it, especially it hit me last night, Richard's low towards me when I'm Rachel, how I feel, is when he says, we'll do what we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's when it just nails me that we're on totally separate pages at that point. And I think it's interesting where the couples end up at the end, because to me, well, I mean, I think you could play it different ways, but I think Richard and I were completely alienated from one another at the end. You know, that there's this sense that, you know, who is this person
right.
that I've been in a relationship with and have I been reading him wrong all along? Like, where are we really, you know? And yet with Wanda and Al, you know, there he is in her lap. And like, that's really moving to me that, you know, like the couple that seems like they have it all together and they're ready to pay for the baby and they've got the room already ends up being totally at opposite ends, you know?
Did you feel that being in the room during the delivery that you had bonded with that child as a new mother does so quickly at birth? That you felt, it seemed as if you had all the emotion of a mother who had just delivered. And your husband wasn't able to share that with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that came across. I think she's been dying for this child, you know? And I think she, by the, you know, after hanging out with Wanda and everything, you know, she's really, I mean, this is her child, and she finally has it, and then for Richard to say that is just, it comes really hard. But that was, I don't know, Tracy, what
do you think? Do you think the marriage survived?
Not quite. That's when I did it, and the way that I had a different Richard too, and the way he was looking at me so coldly when he said, "Do you want me to look at the baby?" He's trying to turn it around and maybe make amends for what just happened, and yet I'm thinking, "I don't know this person. This might be the end of my marriage." And no, I don't want you to go. Forget it. Yeah. It just was.
There was one line in there where Rachel said, "No, I can't have this baby." I can't remember exactly when it was, but she, it was after an argument that she had had with Wanda. Mm-hmm. And she said, "No, I don't want the baby," or something like that.
Oh, end of Act 1. After we've had the fight, and she storms out, and she comes back up. I can see you're too conflicted about this. I'd like to pay for your hospital expenses. That's how I'd like to settle it. At that point, I think she's trying to, also take care of Wanda, too. It seems like that's just not going to work.
And maybe deal with her own feelings about how poorly Wanda, as she sees it, is taking care of herself with the vitamins and the heat. Because I think those things are really bothering her a lot that she's trying to let go of, but they're still bothering her. Because that's from... She brings to the table all the thoughts about pregnancy she's ever heard, and those all include those things. And for Wanda,
for me, I thought that really showed how desperate Rachel was to have a baby. I talked to Ursula about this when we were practicing. That if this was me, it's obvious this woman loves her children, and they want their children. How can I take this woman's baby? Mm-hmm. How can I live with this child that does have a mother and father, and I'm taking advantage of their, you know. So we discussed how, I couldn't do that, but Rachel has tried so hard and so long to have a child that she doesn't care anymore. She's gonna take this baby, and so all that other stuff kind of falls.
I just had a thought with Rachel. Rachel may have been the type of person who has been able to buy everything she ever wanted. And that's why it was so pretty for her to write out a check for $600 to do this and do this. And I wondered, maybe was Rachel's feelings that strong? She really wanted that baby? Or was she so upset because this was something she couldn't buy? She couldn't buy it. At the very end, she couldn't buy it. And maybe that was the reason she was so upset.
I think it's like all this other stuff. That's the one, those are the kind of questions where you just sort of go, gray area. That's what's so great about this story. It has all this gray area that we have to struggle with. Is there anyone else who hasn't said anything would like to add anything? Because we're going to probably wrap up here in a minute or two.
Hey, this is kind of an open question, though. I think it gets at what Tracy said and what you just said about her only being able to, you know, whether she can't buy what she wants. It's interesting that our language for economics and for fierce love are the same when it comes to children. I mean, you're talking about, you know, she finally has her baby, and she's talking about the deepest connection she can possibly get with this newly born child. And at the same time, it's the same language that's being used in the legal documents for this economic transaction. And I wonder if at the end, the point that becomes the part that splits you guys and tears that relationship apart and holds Wanda and, what's his name?
Al's
relationship together is that different kind of language for economics. Because you can't separate, I mean, there's no way of saying I want this baby without meaning money to, I mean, we have no way of saying that.
Right. Anybody else who hasn't had a chance?
I'd just like to say one thing. Richard, I have to respect for making the unpopular choice to reject up front something that he perhaps can't handle. I've seen a lot of people who have rejected years later kids with defects and never see them. And I think that's much more cruel and dishonest and cowardly.
He knew what he could handle and what he couldn't.
Yeah.
And he put it out there. It may not be the most beautiful thing to look at, but he was honest with himself.
It's darn hard to take care of a person with disabilities when they're not cute anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But that they didn't discuss it before kind of blows me away.
Yeah.
In this day and age, people discuss, disabilities or a child with CPE or something. Before it's born.
And that's probably in the language of these contracts these days now. I don't know.
But I think you can discuss it all you want, but with Rachel, what she portrayed is once that baby's in your arms, you're over the fence.
Right.
You know, all of these things that you thought you had in your mind that you were going to do, once that baby's there, you're done, you're toast,
It's interesting though what was portrayed in the discussions ahead of time were how long the legs would be.
Yeah.
And maybe his legs weren't long enough. Something about short was there. Maybe they weren't long enough to handle that much, like the honesty part.
Let's go back here and then we'll probably wrap up.
Two things. One thing we have to remember is Rachel left also. She didn't dissolve her marriage and take the child and do the glorious thing. She left and went for the easier thing of 2 weeks than that. So blame Richard for making this somewhat onerous decision. I think it's unjust. I'm a physician and I see families in my office who children like this have destroyed their family and their marriage.
Uh-huh.
The other children get no time and no energy. They're resentful. The husband and wife are at each other. I think we dealt with that whole idea very casually. This is a horrendous decision. I mean, just absolutely horrendous. And the degree of damage that lack of oxygen can do to a child is unbelievable, both mentally, physically, emotionally. I think we played life with that.
That's one of the... I don't know... That's what's beautiful about this play. It doesn't have a happy ending, and you don't know what happens. I mean, maybe they are getting a divorce, and Rachel can't afford to keep the baby on her own, but she's going to, I don't know, maybe she'll go open a home for, you don't know what happens to their lives after they leave, so you can't even say that, they did the wrong thing or the right thing, or you just have to make up your own.
Well, the great thing is we're all talking about it, and that's for me is the beauty of doing the theater and doing it up here, and I hope you continue to kick this around and tell people about the play and discuss it with everybody. So thank you.
Thank you.